So my first day at Forward as the youth pastor was on April 15th, 2008, and I was 22 at the time. I remember that first day, I did some orientation, and after I did that, I sat down behind my desk in my office by myself, and I felt just absolutely overwhelmed. I was now responsible to run a youth ministry, the youth ministry here. And I had some experience working with youth groups, and I had training. I graduated from Bible college. But this was different. It all depended on me now. Shortly after that, I got my first apartment just on the street from here. And I moved all my stuff in, and I remember going to bed that night and lying in my bed and staring at the ceiling and just not being able to sleep because I was so overwhelmed. This is my apartment. I lived in residence at school without my parents, but this is my apartment. I had to pay the rent here and cook and clean and take care of myself. And I was overwhelmed. It all depended on me. Those are the moments, when I look back on them, that I think I became an adult. I thought I was an adult before then, but that was the time when I really started to understand responsibility and having to work and really take care of myself. Things depended on me now. Now, as I've grown up even more, and as I've my role at the church has changed, and as I got married, and especially as I became a father, that responsibility has grown, and I've become busier and had to work harder at stuff. I have more responsibilities that depend on me. You know, life is full of responsibility, and growing up is about learning to shoulder those responsibilities and be dependable, and all that's really good. It's a good thing to do. It builds character in you. It makes society work and takes care of families, and you know, work is good. Work is a gift from God. But there's a trap that goes along with the good work of life and the responsibilities of adulthood. There's a trap there. It's a sneaky trap. It's significant, but it doesn't feel dangerous sometimes. We can fall into that trap, and when we do, feel like we're actually virtuous and good people for doing it, for being in that trap. And we can also look down on others who haven't fallen into the trap. Do you know what that trap is? It's when we take the phrase, "it all depends on me," a little too seriously. When we go too far and think that we're too important, that somehow we are able to make our lives secure by working hard all the time. In other words, we ultimately forget that it doesn't depend on us, it depends on God. Or to put it even more directly, sometimes we forget that we aren't God. Today we're looking at Psalm 127 together. This is the next psalm in our series on the Psalms of Ascent. And this psalm speaks to our tendency to overwork. It's going to show us that if we don't know how to rest, it's because we don't really trust God properly. If we don't know how to rest, we don't really trust God properly. And this psalm is going to challenge us in two areas of life. It's going to help us to shift our mindset and our work ethics to line up with God's grace and accept his good gifts that he gives us. So let's look at the psalm together. The first area that we're going to be challenged in and we're going to look at is the idea of our jobs, our work. And we're going to be told in this psalm that we need to learn how to rest from work, particularly in our employment. So look again with me at Psalm 127. It's the Song of Ascent of Solomon, and verse 1 says this: "Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the guards stand watch in vain." Now, if you're reading through the Psalms and you get to this psalm, it kind of feels like you've taken a wrong turn and somehow ended up in the Proverbs, right? It's definitely written in that style, which makes sense considering that it's a psalm of Solomon, we're told, in the superscription. Verse 1 speaks of builders working on a house and guards watching over a city. The builders labor hard all day, and then the guards stay up all night watching for enemies and trying to protect the city. They do everything that they can to do their jobs well. They take their responsibilities seriously, as they should. They're doing their jobs. But if God doesn't bless their work, we're told, then it's all in vain. It's for nothing. If God doesn't build the house or watch over the city, the men doing their jobs, and we'll include women in this too, won't be able to stop things from falling apart. You know, there's a common idea out there, and I looked this up this past week, that, you know, if you get home insurance, it will cover normal things like theft and fire, but it won't cover crazy natural disasters like lightning and earthquake and floods because they're, quote, acts of God. I don't know if you've heard of that. Your insurance doesn't cover acts of God. I looked up my insurance this week just to make sure, and my insurance covers almost anything if you add it to the plan, but yeah, most of those things don't come standard. You have to pay extra for them. However, in Ontario, you can't get home protection from landslides, apparently. So you can get insurance against acts of God, except for landslides. But there's more to it than just that. In 2020, I had signed up to go to a conference in the States. I'd signed up before 2020, before I knew about this pandemic thing. And of course, the conference got turned into an online conference. And they sent out an email saying, please don't ask for your money back. Please just accept this online conference, because if you do, we're going to go bankrupt. If you ask for your money back, we will have to just completely shut down and go bankrupt because we've already paid for everything. And yes, we had insurance, but our insurance didn't cover global pandemics. It doesn't matter how hard you work. It doesn't matter how hard you prepare and how well insured you are. There are always going to be things that are out of your control and beyond your ability to plan for. Your hardest work and most diligent preparation can't ensure your security. But what this verse is saying is that everything is in God's control. Everything's in His control. If your work is in line with His will, nothing will be able to stop it. And if it's not, then nothing you do will be able to save it. We don't have time to dig into the why of all of that. You know, why would God allow the pandemic? Why would God allow my house to be destroyed by a landslide? I don't think that's probably going to happen where I live. Why would God allow my city to be destroyed by an attacking enemy, as have happened many times in history? You know, we spent a lot of time considering God's goodness and the reality of suffering over the past few weeks. And you can go back and listen to those again online if you have questions about that. But the point today is simple. You aren't in control of your life. Your desire to work hard and be responsible cannot guarantee your success, your security, or your safety. You and I, we need to know that. And not just know it in our heads, but really let it sink into our souls. We're not the masters of our own destiny. We're not in control because God is. And if we really understand that, then we're ready for verse 2. Look at verse 2 with me. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for He grants sleep to those He loves. Now, the NIV doesn't have the best translation of this verse, because this verse in the NIV, it sort of sounds like it's describing a single mom who's working two jobs just to scrape by and feed her kids. It sounds like it's telling her that she's wasting her time. But that's not what this verse is actually describing. It's not what it's saying. We love the NIV, but sometimes we have to look at other translations to get better translations of particular parts of the Bible. And the English Standard Version, I think, has a better translation of this as I've studied it. It's going to be up on the screen, and here's what it says. It is in vain that you rise up early and go to bed and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil. The verse doesn't describe people who are toiling so that they can have enough to eat. It describes people whose food comes from exhausting and anxious work. Or probably even better, it's saying that some people, their food is exhausting and anxious work. They live to work. They don't know how to stop working. They're like sharks that always have to be moving, otherwise they'll die. People who spend themselves toiling so they can feel productive, so they can feel or be successful or reach a certain level of living. The Psalm says that's in vain. That's a bad way to live your life. Let's think about that a little bit. God gave work to humanity as a gift. It's a good thing. All the way back in Genesis 1, God told Adam and Eve when he created them something, and we're going to put up on the screen for you to see. He told them this, I want you to fill the earth and to subdue it. Go to the next part for this. Fill the earth and subdue it and rule over it, right? Later on in chapter 2, he commands Adam to tend the garden. This is the language of work, of invention, of cultivation, of discovery, of labor. It's the language of work. God says, this is part of why I created you. God said, after he created humanity and gave us work to do, that it was very good. It's part of being a human made in the image of God. It's a good thing. But what we continue to see as we continue to read Genesis is that rest is also part of being a human made in the image of God. It's also a good thing. God made man and woman on the sixth day, instituted work on the sixth day, called it very good, and then we know on the seventh day he rested. He didn't rest because he was tired, because he needed rest. He rested for us as a pattern, as an example for us. And as we know, our Bibles, later that pattern became a command in the Ten Commandments. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Now, it's a little complicated to know as Christians. All the rest of the Ten Commandments are very straightforward, but the fourth commandment, the command that we have in the Ten Commandments to remember the Sabbath and keep it holy, is a little complicated to know how to take that into the New Testament for Christians, because a lot of it's very Jewish in context. And the New Testament makes it a little bit, things change a little bit in the New Testament. So we're not going to get into the weeds of all that theology right now. But what I want you to do is I want you to think about what Jesus says in Mark chapter 2, verse 27, when he's talking to people about the Sabbath, and he says this: the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. In other words, God didn't make humans for the purpose of following the rules of the Sabbath. God made Sabbath for us. It's not supposed to be a burden. It's supposed to be a gift. Rest is a gift. And even though some of the really Jewish parts of following the Sabbath, like specifically resting on Saturday from sundown on Friday to sundown on Saturday, and not doing any work at all, those parts of it don't necessarily apply to us as Christians today, it's still a good thing for us to do. Just like work is a gift from God, so is rest. So here's what we need to think about. If you live your life working long and exhausting hours of constant toil, obsessively or anxiously spending yourself on work, you aren't living as God intended you to live. You're missing out on his gift, and you're disobeying his command. You're not living a truly human life as God intended. The way you're living is vanity. It's not good for you. It's empty. As he says in verse 2 of Psalm 127, God grants sleep to those he loves. Rest and sleep, they're a gift from God. And as I said at the beginning, if you don't know how to rest, then you don't really know how to trust God properly. Now that sounds like a sweeping statement, I know, and it sounds really harsh. But it's true. And I want you to think about this with me. Why do people work too hard? Why do maybe you work too hard? Maybe because your identity is wrapped up in your career and having a good position matters too much to you and you can't stop because you need to climb the ladder and you need to impress everyone. You need to say, this is who I am. I do this job and I work hard at it and I succeed at it. It's your identity. Or maybe your job and your salary, they make you feel secure. You and your family are safe and provided for. Your kids will have the best education. They'll have a nice backyard. You're going to have a good retirement fund. Or maybe it's because you think that working hard gives you value, right? You've been taught to work hard your whole life and that not working hard is shameful. You need to produce something worthwhile for your life to be worthwhile. You need to accomplish great things to be great. And all those motivations, guys, whether it's identity or security or purpose, value in your life, you know, those are so common in our culture. They're the things we absorb from the air around us that were drilled into us by our parents, and we want to drill into our kids too. We don't understand people who don't live like this. But guess what? All those motivations are contrary to the gospel. They're opposed to it. If you find your identity or your security or your value from your work, then you're not finding them in Jesus. It doesn't matter what your job title is. Jesus says, if you trust in me, I will call you brother or sister. And you will reign with me for all eternity. That's your identity. It doesn't matter how much money you have as a safety net. Jesus says, if you trust in me, I will hold you safe and secure in my arms. He says, no one can take you out of my hands. That's your security. It doesn't matter how much you can accomplish. Jesus says, trust in me. I've accomplished everything for you because I thought you're worth it. That's your value. And that's the gospel. All of your best efforts are vanity. They're useless and empty without Jesus. If you're doing them to be good enough or secure enough or to find your identity in them, you will utterly fail because you're not good enough to do that. You can't find those things in your work or your ability to work hard. And humans trying to be good enough without God is why the world is such a mess, right? That's where it comes from. Back in Genesis, again, when Adam and Eve choose to disobey God, right? You think about the first sin of humanity. It wasn't, they started by stealing something or murdering somebody. They didn't start by lying. They started by just not trusting God, by trying to figure things out on their own, right? God says, I can't have that fruit because it'll make me wise to know good and evil. Well, I want to know for myself what good and evil is. I'm not going to trust God, and I am going to do that. They wanted to know for themselves and to do for themselves. They wanted to figure out life on their own instead of trusting God. And as a result, the world's broken. Every other sin comes out of that sin. And God even said that now, because of sin, because the world's broken, there's a curse on the world. Work, the good gift that God gave, becomes a toil. It becomes struggle and vanity. It's because of this brokenness in the world that farmers would work for a good harvest only to have drought or insects destroy it. It's because of the curse of sin that builders would labor on a house only to have a landslide destroy it and your insurance not cover it. It's because of the curse of sin that guards would watch over a city only to have an army find a weakness in the city anyway and defeat it. It's because of the curse of sin that businesses go under and economies fail. All of that happens because sin brought a curse on the world. And now work is often futile. Because we couldn't trust God, but had to do things our own way. And the world is now full of grief. The gospel is the answer to all that. It's the good news that God provided forgiveness for our sins and rescue from our misguided attempts to work things out for ourselves. Because Jesus did everything for us, right? He lived a perfect life that was without sin, that he fully trusted in God. Jesus was never lazy and never worked too hard. He had that perfect balance. He did it exactly right. He did take time to rest. And then after living that perfect life, he took the consequences for our sinful lives on the cross. He died and rose again, and now all that's left for us is to put our trust in him. If we trust him, then we have a new identity as members of God's family. We don't have to worry about what anyone else thinks of us. We have honor that goes with that from God. If we trust in him, then we have security for all of eternity, no matter what happens to us, what happens to our economy, what happens to the banks, what happens to our job, we have security with Christ for all of eternity. If we trust in God, we don't need to prove ourselves. Jesus proved to us how much we have value in his eyes. We can rest from our efforts to be good enough or strong enough or safe enough. Jesus is all that and more for us. Now, if you don't know how to rest, I'm not saying that you're not a Christian. I'm just saying that all sin comes from a failure to remember and understand the gospel. We need to remember these things and be able to trust God to live this out. And of course, that starts with the invitation that if you're not a Christian, you do need to put your trust in God for the first time. Put your trust in Jesus and find that security and find that identity and find that the value that God has in for you to be forgiven and loved forever. And that's open to you and you can have that. So how do we take this truth of the gospel of rest and apply it to our lives in this passage? Well, first, I do want to say, you know, if you tend to be lazy, and none of us, I'm not saying it's you're either like a way too hard worker or you're way too lazy. It's a spectrum, right? And somewhere in there is like the perfect, what we're supposed to do. But if you tend to be on the lazy side of things, and you can tell that by the fact that you don't hate this message right now, and I'll admit that I'm one of you, I want to remind us that this isn't an excuse to be lazy, right? Rest and laziness are not the same thing. Rest is, I know that I've done the work that God's called me to do. I've worked hard, I've done what I was supposed to do, and now I can step back from it and trust that the world will keep on spinning without me. That I'm not too important to stop working because God has it in his hands. That's what rest is. Laziness is just when you just don't want to work. When you don't want to work as hard as you should when you know that you should. There's a difference, and I think we can tell what that difference is. So I want to say for those of us who tend towards laziness, this isn't an excuse for that. So don't think that for a minute. God has lots to say about the sin of laziness in his word, but that's not this passage today. The second thing we need to think about as we apply this to our lives is, for those of us who tend to be overworkers, let's acknowledge that there are seasons and days and times in your life when you will have to work extra hard, right? The lines are a bit fuzzy here. Even as someone who doesn't tend to work extra hard, I know that in my job there are days when I have to work on my days off, times when I have to put in extra hours because things come up that you have to deal with in the moment, right? Even Jesus, when he was exhausted, saw the 5,000 that had come to be fed by him, and he took the time to be with them instead of taking the rest that he really needed in that moment, right? There's room for saying, I need to put in a little bit extra effort today. So I'm not just saying, you know, clock out at the end of your day and don't think about it anymore. There's a fuzziness here. But third, and here's where I think it really hits the road for some of us, Jesus was also willing to disappear when there was still work to be done. He would just go away and go and pray by himself and say, ah, we're going to the next town now, even though there was still a lineup of people waiting to see him, right? Jesus, though he was God, also knew as a human that he needed his rest. He was weak. He did what he needed to do. And that just because people told him that things were urgent didn't mean he was a slave to them. That he could make those decisions in his wisdom and in his trust for God. So each of you overworkers listening today, I want to challenge you just to do this, to take stock of your life. Prayerfully consider what you need to do. Right? Each of your situations is different. Some of you are in jobs that require 70 plus hours a week of work regularly. Some of you just have personalities that will fill your free time with other projects. Some of you are people pleasers and just don't know how to say no. Some of you are a combination of those things or something else entirely. What does God require of you? And the first step is to recognize the unhealthy and yes, the sinful patterns in your life. To recognize them and bring them to God in repentance and just ask him for help. The road through this isn't going to be simple. Maybe you just need better boundaries at work, but maybe you also just need a different job. Maybe you need to manage your time better so you aren't working on your days when you're supposed to be resting. Whatever it is, and I don't know what the answer is for each of us, ask God to help you trust him more and be able to enjoy the gift of rest. Also, maybe ask your spouse or your Christian brothers and sisters to help you take stock of your life and build better habits, because the reality is this doesn't just affect you, it affects the people around you as well. And they can help you. God's given you the church, he's given you your family to help you with these things. But this truth that it affects people around you brings us to the second half of our passage. Because the first half talks about resting in our work and in our employment. The second half talks to us about resting with your children and our families. Look with me at verse 3. Children are a heritage from the Lord, and offspring are a reward from this. A reward from him. So again, when you read through this psalm, it seems like you're in the Proverbs. The first half and the second half just seem to be like two separate thoughts that don't really go together, kind of like pearls on a necklace that are just strung together, and that's sort of how Proverbs is written. But though this psalm does feel a bit disjointed, these two parts of it are actually tackling the same subject from different angles, from different areas of life. Verse 2 tells us that sleep is a gift from God, and now verse 3 tells us that children are a gift from God, and in my experience, you don't tend to get those gifts at the same time, but you get one or the other, but they're both gifts. And this verse calls children a heritage from the Lord and a reward from him. Right? A heritage is a special gift that's given to you with the purpose of lasting longer than you do. It's a testimony that goes on to the next generation, something that you pass on after you, which makes a lot of sense when you're thinking about children. The word reward, we could misinterpret that to say, well, it's something that we get when we work hard. And that's not what God's saying, right? It's not like people who deserve children get them and people who don't deserve children don't get them. You can look around you and see that's not true. The word reward there is talking about the value of something that's given to you. The children are valuable and given to you by God. So why does the psalm go here? Why does it talk about these things? Well, because as much as your job or school might cause you to work hard, your children are going to take even more work. Children are a lot of work, and they're a big responsibility, right? You don't get to put in your hours with your kids and then clock out for the night. It just doesn't work that way, right? You are on call 24/7 as a parent. And on top of that, as I said before, children are one of the main motivations for working hard at your job so you can provide for them and give them a good life. With kids, as a parent, you're responsible not only to provide for them, to keep them safe, but you care for their hygiene, make them brush their teeth, make them take baths. You care for them when they're sick. You teach them literally everything at first. And then when they get a little older, you're worried about the things that they learn outside of you, and you have to kind of help course correct from all of that. Your job is to be an example to them of loving God and living morally and of being compassionate and kind. It's all-consuming work. Being a parent. And God speaks into that work and says, yes, but you're still not God. I'm God. You're not God. I gave you those children, God says. And the implication tied to the first half of the psalm is that though we are required to work hard and to raise our kids, unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. When I was growing up, my parents had a cross stitch of that hanging up in our hallway. That verse isn't just about building a house, it's about building a household. It's about raising a family. I mean, one of the things that I'm hyper aware of every day as a father is that I cannot guarantee that my kids will grow up healthy and safe. I can't guarantee that they will choose to love Jesus when they grow up. I wish I could, but I can't. All I can do is do my best and then leave it up to God and rest in that. They aren't mine. My kids aren't mine. They're his. He gave them to Becky and to me as a gift, but as a heritage, as a testimony that, Lord willing, will outlast me. They're a reminder of my mortality. They're a reminder of my inability. My kids are a reminder of my need to rest in God. I mean, that's clear as a parent of young children. It becomes clear in new ways when your kids grow up. Look at verse 4. Verse 4 says this, like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be put to shame when they contend with their opponents in court. This is one of those things that you read it and you scratch your head and you're like, I don't know what that's talking about. How are kids like an arrow? I mean, they hurt me sometimes, but what's that talking about? Arrows are used by warriors to fight, right? To defend the city when enemies attack. So how are kids like that? You know, if you have kids when you're young, this is what I'm talking about, having kids in your youth, you spend your life shaping them and loving them and trusting God to help them, and eventually you have to let them go, just like an arrow, right? And they have to go and do the things that God's called them to do. Kids aren't swords that you can hold on to. And the hope and prayer is that the arrow is a good arrow, will fly straight and hit the mark. The psalm ends with a scenario of an aged parent facing an opponent in court, and the grown children, now mature and godly people of virtue, they're standing by their parents to defend them as testimonies of their character. That's a scenario that's specific to the time and culture the psalm was written that would happen in the cities a lot. But the principle is this. It goes back to the idea that your children are a heritage, that they're a gift that will outlast you, and a reminder of your mortality, and that you are not God. Though they depend on you utterly in their early days, one day you will depend on them. So all through your life, it's a reminder that we need to depend on God. That if he builds your house, Your kids will fly straight and true and bring honor and joy to you in old age. Now, the thing that we have to address is that I know that as we talk about this, some of our hearts are breaking. Because you have children that have grown up and aren't walking with God. If I can put it crudely, the arrow has missed the mark that you hope that it would hit. Now, I can't imagine what you're going through. And I've told you this before. I was some of their youth pastors, and I love them as well, and I mourn too. And I pray for, even if I don't know your kids, and I know they're not walking with God, I pray for them regularly. And I hope we all are praying for our loved ones in our church whose kids aren't walking with Christ. The comfort this psalm offers is simply this. You aren't God. You couldn't have controlled them. But God is God, and he's still at work. And so as you grieve over your adult children with a broken heart, as you continue to be a godly example to them and point them to Christ, keep resting in God. He is the one who's in control. Rest in his loving arms and weep into his chest, and just trust him. This week, I stumbled across a quote on the internet. This quote said this: pray like everything depends on God, and work like everything depends on you. Apparently, Dave Ramsey, the Christian financial guru, said that. But then I found out before him that apparently Martin Luther said it in the 1500s. And then I found out that apparently St. Ignatius of Loyola, who is the founder of the Jesuits, said it around the same time. And then I found out that St. Augustine said it in the 300s AD. I don't really know if any of them actually said that. All I could find were these like inspirational poster quotes on Google Images. So who knows if anyone, I'm pretty sure Dave Ramsey said it, but I don't know about the rest of them. But you know who didn't say it? God. God didn't say that. Because if you work like everything depends on you, you won't be able to trust or pray like it depends on God. You won't be able to stop. So I have a better quote. It's not as poster worthy, but it's more biblically. Trust that everything depends on God. Believe it. And then work hard and rest well as a result. That's what this psalm calls us to.